My name is Chandra Middleton, and I'm the Director of the Associates Program here at ELI, standing in for Scott Shang today. Welcome to the Climate Briefings. Today we have Mike Gerard, who is Michael Gerard from the Director of the Center for Climate Change Law at Columbia Law School. We have Kyle Danish from Van S. Feldman, and Nikki Roy, Vice President of Strategic Outreach at Pew Center for Climate and Energy Solutions. So with that, I'll just turn it over to Michael.
Thanks very much. The D.C. Circuit heard argument on February 28th and 29th on the many challenges to EPA's greenhouse gas regulations. I'm going to describe what happened and make some predictions about outcomes. Then Kyle will talk about some of the implications of the likely outcomes. The first day of the arguments mostly concerned EPA's endangerment determination, and the second day mostly concerned EPA's timing and tailoring rules. I think it's pretty clear that the panel will uphold the endangerment finding and the resulting regulation of greenhouse gases for motor vehicles. The panel had no interest in any of petitioners' contentions for how EPA could have considered policy issues such as the cost of compliance in its decisions to do an endangerment determination, to find an endangerment, and to regulate motor vehicles after making that determination. The panel clearly felt that what EPA did here was allowed and indeed compelled by Massachusetts versus EPA. Nor was there any traction in petitioners' contention that the record basis for the endangerment determination was inadequate. The judges did not buy the arguments that the models upon which EPA had relied were too uncertain, that EPA had failed to account for scientific uncertainty, or that EPA had overstated its scientific certainty in a manner that cast doubt on its conclusion. Judge Santel seemed unhappy that EPA had combined all six greenhouse gases in the endangerment finding when motor vehicles are only emit four of them, because that in effect turned all six into regulated pollutants triggering prevention of significant deterioration and best available control technology requirements. Judges Tatel and Rogers did not seem so concerned. So the first day of the argument, all in all, went quite well for EPA. The same thing cannot be said about the second day. The panel may well conclude that petitioners lack standing to contest the tailoring rule because it reduces rather than increases their regulatory burden. But the panel seemed ready to allow petitioners to challenge the premise of the timing and tailoring rules, which is that absent such a rule, the requirement for best available control technology under the Prevention of Significant Deterioration Program, PSD, would automatically apply to all greenhouse gas pollutants as soon as they become regulated pollutants under the motor vehicle rule. The source of that automatic trigger is EPA's 1980 rulemaking and the D.C. Circuit's 1979 opinion in Alabama Power versus Costal, that a pollutant could be regulated under the PSD program if there is no national ambient air quality standard for it, even if there's no national ambient air quality standard for it. All three judges seemed ready to say that circumstances that arose long after those rulings and the fact that many of the parties in the current litigation were not around at the time of Alabama Power meant the court could revisit these issues more than 30 years later. Though the court seemed inclined to allow this challenge, it's less clear where they will come out on the merits. It's possible that the court will find that certain language in the statute allows air pollutants that don't have national ambient air quality standards to be subject to the PSD program, such as the statute's repeated use of, quote, any pollutant, close quote, or any regulated pollutant, and references to protecting public health and welfare beyond just the air quality standards. But if the court does not find that the statute clearly provides this authority, and it moves on to assessing EPA's judgment, in other words, if it moves from Chevron Step 1 to Chevron Step 2 analysis, EPA could have problems. The court might find that EPA did not have to use the administrative necessity and absurd results doctrines to raise the permitting thresholds from 100 or 250 tons per year to 100,000 tons per year. Instead, under this view, EPA could have decided not to subject greenhouse gases to the PSD program at all, because there are no national ambient air quality standards for them. The court repeatedly pressed EPA's lawyers on the question of why EPA had to choose to regulate greenhouse gases under the PSD program and to use these doctrines to get the threshold down to reasonable levels, rather than choosing to interpret the statute to avoid PSD permitting for greenhouse gases because of the lack of an air quality standard for them. The court did not seem satisfied with EPA's answers. Now I'll turn it over to Kyle to explain the implications of the likely decision from the D.C. Circuit.
Thanks, Mike. I'm going to pick it up with a sort of hypothetical assumption that the panel will in some way rule against EPA, not on the endangerment finding or the tailpipe rule, but on the, as Mike was talking about, on the issue of whether the agency was somehow foreclosed from considering another interpretation of the PSD and Title V provisions that would allow those provisions to exclude greenhouse gases. And it's hard to know exactly even what form that that sort of decision would take. It could take an actual interpretation, form of an actual interpretation by the panel, or some sort of remand to the agency to consider this question. In any event, it seems to me that whatever the form of the panel's decision, if it moves in that particular direction, it could have implications for administrative law, for the Clean Air Act, and obviously for climate policy. I'll talk about each of those categories separately. First, potential implications for administrative law. At one point, Judge Tatel turned to the room and said, you know, for those who are students of administrative law, it doesn't get any better than this. And indeed, there are some really potentially interesting implications for administrative law. One is on the issue of when certain new circumstances arise that allow for reconsideration of a long-held agency interpretation. This really goes to the Section 307 of the Clean Air Act, which basically forecloses any challenges to a rule after 60 days after its promulgation, except for these sort of circumstances that arise later that could not have been either foreseen or for which there was not a party who could challenge the rule. And here we have an interesting potential case with that, and this could make new law in that area or new precedent. A second area of administrative law that's really could be neatly in play here, and Mike raised this one, is the Chevron implications of the interpretation of the PSD and Title V provisions. And in particular, if the panel says, no, there really was some reconsideration the agency could do here, and by the way, we think it's not clear, not plain language of the statute, but really in Chevron Step 2, it could be some interesting law made here about the interaction of Chevron Step 2 and whatever deference is provided under Chevron Step 2 with these issues of the, you know, these sort of not frequently used doctrines of absurd results and administrative necessity and step-in-time rulemaking. In particular, the judges on the panel at times pushed EPA essentially to say, look, if we are in Chevron Step 2 and you had some discretion here, were you not really, in effect, required to consider some alternative interpretation of this language that would not lead to absurd results and would not require you to depart through these other doctrines so sort of dramatically from the language of the statute? So, I don't think there's really any case law that's sort of knitted together the Chevron line of cases with these sort of doctrines that the agency has invoked, or if there is, there's going to be some interesting new law potentially made in that area. The second category of implications if this goes back to the agency on these PSD and Title V interpretations are obviously implications for the Clean Air Act. And here the question, you know, is really is that could we end up in a result where the agency revisits its interpretation of the PSD and Title V provisions to limit the application of those provisions only to pollutants subject to national ambient air quality standards? And would that affect any number of already issued pollutants that address non-NAAQS pollutants? I just don't know how big that universe is. That will be something that will take some scrutiny. And then finally, I think to look at sort of the implications for climate change policy, if indeed the endangerment finding is upheld, the tailpipe rule is upheld, but we move towards a interpretation that says that greenhouse gases emissions are not pollutants to which the PSD provisions and Title V provisions apply. What would that mean for EPA's climate policy? Well, obviously it has very direct effects on the PSD and Title V permitting that rulemakings that EPA has done. Notably, it would not affect the new source performance standards, which we've talked about on many calls and which always seem to be imminent coming up any time now, but to the extent that EPA falls through on the development of rules for greenhouse gas emission standards under the NSPS provisions for power plants and refineries, that's a whole different section of the Clean Air Act and would not be affected by this sort of decision. And arguably, you know, you could make more rational climate change policy under the NSPS than under the PSD provisions, insofar as the PSD provisions only apply to new and modified facilities and require this sort of case-by-case determination of emission limits. The new source performance standards here ostensibly would apply not only to new and modified, but also to existing sources, and involve setting more sort of across-the-board standards for all facilities in those categories and maybe sort of a opportunity to make more rational climate policy. Now, to be sure, there will be any number of legal challenges and policy design issues with those. We've talked about those on previous calls. But in any event, they would not be affected by the sort of outcome we're describing here in the D.C. Circuit. This sort of outcome also would not, of course, affect the greenhouse gas emissions reporting program, which has its own separate and very specific authority. One area that to watch, though, if the decision here is that the PSD and Title V provisions do not specifically reach pollutants that are not subject to national ambient air quality standards, there's still a scenario in which greenhouse gases could become subject to national ambient air quality standards. There's a long sort of suspended petition for rulemaking that came from the Center for Biological Diversity that requests that EPA set greenhouse gas NAAQS and points out that the sort of finding that EPA made under the tailpipe rule and the endangerment finding there under Section 202, the language for an endangerment finding there is quite similar to the language under the NAAQS provisions of the Clean Air Act. And this petition argues that EPA, having made an endangerment finding, is in fact compelled under Section 202, is in fact compelled to now set NAAQS for greenhouse gases. Now, many people would not find that to be a particularly rational way to approach climate policy, and it would likely take several years in any event to develop NAAQS. But this may not be the end of the story, because if EPA follows up and creates greenhouse gas national ambient air quality standards, well, then under this reasoning that we're talking about, the PSD and Title V permitting provisions would eventually apply. Thanks. That's my my commentary.
I think if it's okay, Nikki, before we turn it over to you, I just wanted to remind folks, if they have any questions, to send them to me. My email address is Middleton, M-I-D-D-L-E-T-O-N, at ELI.org. Okay, go ahead, Nikki.
Great, thanks. Switching subjects a little bit, let's talk a little bit about Congress. Frequent listeners on this call will know that I every now and then report on the non-events in Congress as well as the events. A continuing non-event is seen in the lack of an attempt by opponents of EPA's authority to regulate greenhouse gases to take on that issue in the context of the transportation bill. I think a year ago, maybe over a year ago, it looked like every effort to stop EPA from doing that would have been made in the context of any must-pass bill. The transportation bill is a little more precarious at this point than transportation bills usually are, but I think most people expect that somehow this thing is going to get through, and yet there has been an attempt to tie EPA's hands in its context, and I think that is sort of part of a continuing pattern, a non-event that I think worth reporting on. Meanwhile, back to an actual event, Senator Bingaman introduced a clean energy standard bill a couple weeks back. Bingaman has been probably the leading proponent in the Senate of a renewable energy standard for many years. But in fact, passed him out of his committee and really moved them forward, though never to enactment. When President Obama spent a few minutes talking about a clean energy standard in a State of the Union speech last year, Bingaman decided, well, let's give that idea a try. And this, of course, would set a standard on the amount of electricity that power companies would provide from so-called clean sources, being renewables, nuclear power, large head hydro, clean coal with carbon capture and storage. In other words, adding to the renewable portfolio a bunch of other technologies that had typically been associated more with Republicans. And in fact, the idea of a clean energy standard was, initially offered by Senator Domenici years ago, and then more recently by Senators Lugar and Graham, all Republicans. So Senator Bingaman has said that he wants to hold a couple of hearings on his bill. I don't think, when I look at the committee, I'm not sure that he has votes to get the bill out of committee, and I'm sure he has looked at that himself. And in any event, he's reported several bills out of committee in the past year, and none of them are expected to be enacted. But at least at a high likelihood of enactment. But I think what he's doing with his clean energy standard, as he's doing with much of the other good work that his committee has done in the past year, is putting ideas out there. Developed in the way that his excellent staff always develops these ideas, and so that in a future Congress, maybe next year, maybe the Congress after that, when Congress is ready to take on these issues again, we'll be able to use this work as a resource. The last thing I want to mention, sort of a newer development. Congressman Waxman, who's a ranking Democrat on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, joined with Congressman Markey, and then both of them Democrats, and then two former Republican congressmen, Sherwood Bullard and Wayne Gilchrist, in an op-ed a couple weeks ago calling for a carbon tax, the revenue of which would be used to address the deficit. And I just saw a notice this afternoon that the Center for American Progress is going to be providing a forum for for Congressman Waxman and Gilchrist to talk about this idea further. There have been people talking about this issue back and forth. There are different schools of thought about whether it's best to have this be seen as a, you know, what is it, a climate measure? Is it an environmental measure? Is it a deficit reduction measure, or is it something else? The congressman has his own view on this, and I think it's worth noting that that he continues to he's starting to be out there on it. And that's it for me.
Great. So we've gotten one question, and I think probably either Mike or Kyle could take this. But wondering if you could briefly talk about what Chevron Step 1 is versus Chevron Step 2, just kind of a refresher of a couple sentences.
Well, Chevron Step 1 is basically if the statute itself, if the language of the statute is clear and unambiguous, you don't go any beyond anywhere beyond that. And Chevron Step 2 is if there is some ambiguity, then additional analysis is necessary to look at whether the agency is following the intent of Congress and is otherwise behaving rationally.
Okay, great. Do any of you have questions for each other?
Well, let me ask either Kyle or Nikki. We keep on talking about the long-awaited NSPS standards, and that may take on increasing significance depending on what the D.C. Circuit does. Do we have any more information on when we'll see those?
I don't know if we have. Go ahead, Kyle.
No, I just was, you know, the trade press that came around today reminded me that, I guess, Gina, the AIR, Assistant Administrator for AIR, Gina McCarthy, said at a conference on February 29th that it would come out shortly. I don't know that that that's about as specific as I've seen. I don't know how much, I don't know how to measure shortly, though.
I mean, the I think the I mentioned at the beginning of my remarks that that we have not seen an effort to handcuff EPA's authority in the most recent must-pass bills, and my sense is that this silence is something that the administration wants to maintain, and it could be the case that they are holding off. You know, the package for the NSPS for a new power plants has been at OMB for months now, and obviously it's being held there. You know, I don't think it's a question of a substantive review that's keeping it there. My sense is that the administration is trying to decide is trying to wait until some of these must-pass bills go by before they throw it out. On the other hand, it could be that they'll find themselves too late in the political season, and that the gasoline price issue will be too big, and even though that these are not directly related, that they it would sort of exacerbate the public's view of them in that context. It could be that they decide not to go with it. I would not be completely surprised not to see any further action from the administration this year on greenhouse gas regulations.
I think I agree with Nikki's analysis. They're trying to find some seam in the political noise in which to drop the thing. I would mention that an issue that sort of has started to come up, we've mentioned in a previous call that what is over at OMB is a an NSPS, greenhouse gas NSPS, that only affects new and, we think, modified power plants. And while that has presumably less overall dramatic footprint than one that addresses existing power plants, for which I think it's not there will not probably be, there may be some sort of ideas or proposal thrown out this year, but not probably a final rule. While presumably it would be a little less controversial, it has a controversial element in it insofar as while there are not a lot of new coal-fired power plants that people are thinking of, there are any number of modifications that could occur to coal-fired power plants. And so it will be interesting to see how this rule defines the modification issue. Because if there's a very stringent standard that effectively, as has been sort of rumored, that the standard would effectively require a power plant, any new or modified power plant, to be a natural gas plant or a coal plant with CCS, carbon capture and sequestration, then it'll be important to see what sort of circumstances would constitute a, quote, a, you know, modification for an existing power plant, because that would subject an existing coal-fired power plant to these very stringent standards. And there, of course, we know that the power sector is expecting to do all sorts of things to power plants to comply with the various EPA rules that are coming down for the power sector. And so there's, you know, a good bit of concern and interest about how that issue will be handled in this standard.
Kyle, is it your understanding that the NSPS that is at OMB would cover all fossil fuel power plants and not only coal power plants?
Yeah, I think it would cover, steam generating, right, you know, fossil plants, but not necessarily combustion turbines. There's a sort of a question there, at least, you know, the traditional categories that they've been looking at for power plants. There's a part of the gas sector that may not be in there. But yes, it would be gas and coal for the most part.
Okay. But do you think that it would have much effect on gas? I mean, other than inducing some plants to coal plants to switch, but do you think that if someone is going to be building a new natural gas-fired steam electric power plant that it would look much different with that standard in place?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, I think everything I've heard has suggested that the standard, that EPA is moving towards a single emission standard for coal and natural gas, and that standard would likely reflect an efficient, you know, a very efficient natural gas power plant. So even for a new or modified natural gas plant, there would be, you know, this would be on the higher end, presumably, the more advanced and efficient plants.
And I have to say that this is part of why I am thinking we may that proposal might not be released this year, because while people seem to be projecting that only natural gas plants are going to be built, or, you know, very likely it's only going to be natural gas plants that are built for the next few years, especially with the prices that we see, setting a standard at that level could be interpreted by some as being, you know, an assault on coal. And I'm sure that that's not a storyline the administration wants to highlight this year.
Mm-hmm.
So they could just hold off on it for the year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we're seeing any number of other rules just sit there. The CEQ rules under NEPA for greenhouse gases have been sitting there for 2 years already. Have been sitting at CEQ for 2 years, so a lot of things are held up, I think.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I wanted to mention for folks on the call that on March 1st, ELI and some co-sponsors hosted a debrief of the D.C. Circuit's oral arguments on EPA's greenhouse gas rulemakings, and those recordings, both audio and visual, are available on our website. And I think with that, that concludes the climate briefing for today. Thanks, everyone.